Well, good afternoon, everyone, and a really warm welcome to the last of the seminars today at Multiply 2021. This is the Pioneering Planting and Planet seminar. And before we get going, just a few practical things for me to run through. Firstly, we will be recording this session and it will be available in the future to watch via the digital platform ccx.media. The only people visible will be me and our speaker and panelists. If you post a question in the question box, it will not be visible in the recording. If we mention your question, we will only mention the first name of you as delegate to comply with GDPR. Secondly, to ask a question today, please put it in the Q&A box rather than the chat. If your question is already in the question box, then do like it so that it gets upvoted and is more likely to be answered by our panel later on. Please use the chat section for chat and the Q&A feature for questions. And please do share anything that you find interesting and informative from this session using the chat box, but also on social media. We have a handle at the Gregory CCX, hashtag MultiplyX2021 or hashtag CCX. Either of those or all are wonderful. My name is Lee. I'm going to be the seminar host today. I'm based in Newcastle, working as the Associate Minister at St. Thomas's, which is a resource church right in the centre of Newcastle city centre, and also a church plant from St. Michael of Belfry in York. But today we have the wonderful Kate Williams, who is Environmental Engagement Officer for Gloucester Diocese. We have Rachel Summers. Rachel is a forest school practitioner and trainer from East London, alongside training for ordained pioneer ministry. She has lots of good ideas, some of which actually end up happening, and her hands are never quite mud free. And finally, but not least, we have Anne Scott. Anne is a missional leader for Green Light and Environmental Community, as well as an advocate for Eco Church and a forest school teacher. So a fantastic lineup today. We're going to start our time by hearing a talk from Kate, and we'll then hear responses from panelists Rachel and Anne before moving on to an open conversation and Q&A time. So we'd love to also hear from you as delegates. Please do use the Q&A and the chat facilities. And Kate, over to you.
Okay, just bear with me a second to get this started. Okay. I'll just go as I am. So I'm Kate, Environmental Engagement Officer, very involved in Pioneer Ministry in various ways as well. I was in a previous role with Gloucester Diocese until December, which was a lot on Fresh Expressions, Pioneer Ministry, facilitating the local network, all of that kind of stuff. So I want that box to get out of the way so that I can... It's not going to, is it? Okay, well, we'll do it this way. Okay, so why planet is my starting point for today? And on this slide, I have three why planet images. And I'm referencing here the climate crisis, the biodiversity crisis, and also the impact that these things have on the state of our church's health. So that the first image is actually from NASA and illustrates the fact that the fluctuations in temperature, the rise in temperature, is not following the trajectory of solar activity. So it's very clear that it's on a different track and is a human-made problem. Habitat loss, the connection between habitat loss and biodiversity in the boxes at the bottom there, and a statistic from the State and Nature report, 41% of UK species are declining, with 1 in 10 threatened with extinction. And then at the pink and yellow is an image from the Burning Down the House report, which Tier Fund and Youthscape produced last year, reminding us of finding through their research that 9 out of 10 Christian teenagers surveyed are concerned about climate change, and 1 in 10 think that their church is doing enough, meaning of course that 9 in 10 think that their church is not doing enough. So we have the environmental crisis itself, which is a good reason to be doing things, but also the state of the health of our churches. If we are not, as churches, working on this very key ethical issue of our times, we lose the faith of the young people in our churches. We lose integrity, we lose the right to speak, and our health as a Christian community is damaged. I think it's really important for us to be aware that this isn't a fashionable issue picked up from society around us. This is something which goes very deep and rooted in our faith, perhaps lost and forgotten in recent times within Christianity. And the crisis around us in society is reminding us and having us look back into the roots of our faith to find out what are the tradition and the biblical resources say to us about environmental concerns. So this slide, starting with the Old Testament, I'm going to do a quick whiz through the Bible in about 2 minutes. So starting with the Old Testament, and the sense, the kind of a headline in the Old Testament of interconnectivity between God and the people and the land. And by the land, we're not talking here about political boundaries. We tend to think of the land in biblically as political boundaries, but actually we're talking about the mud and the earth, and you know, the stuff of life, everything that grows in the mud in the land, everything that lives off the land. So we're talking about all creation there, really, the whole of what God has made. So I get this, Walter Brueggemann talks about this a lot in this book, The Land, that I've stuck the image up there. And he's a biblical theologian, does the detailed work, kind of looks at original language and all of that kind of stuff. So I'm just taking his headline and running with it, interconnection between God and the people and the land. The left-hand side of this triangle is what we talk about most in church. That's the connection between people and God, you know, personal relationship with God, the relationship between the community of faith and God. The right-hand side, a reminder that God remains in relationship with the whole of creation. It's not something that God did and then stepped back, but God continues to be in relation with all creation. And we see that in the nature psalms, that's that sense that all creation praises, a fabulous passage in Job reminding us that that all creation speaks of God, all creation teaches us of God. And then on the bottom there, this is one that that is around us in wider society quite a lot, but the sense of connection between people and the lands, that we need to be connected. We need time in green spaces. We need that for our well-being, for our mental health, for all kinds of things. So interconnection in all kinds of ways. Jesus teaching. So I've jumped into the Gospels now. Jesus teaching so much which references the natural world in one way or another, kind of life and growth and harvest, the seed that dies in order for there to be life, for there to be fruitfulness, the vine and the branches, sheep and shepherds. It's just kind of all over the place in Jesus' teaching, and a real sense in his teaching that he himself is rooted in the things of the natural world and referencing them and learning and bringing that to our attention. Colossians. So we're now skipping through Jesus very fast and much too fast, but now into the later New Testament. Colossians reminding us that it's not just humanity or individual human beings that are reconciled with God through the work of the cross, but actually all that God has made is reconciled through the work of the cross. So there is an all creation perspective to all our things of faith, and actually to the central story of our faith, Christ coming amongst us, the story we remember at Christmas, and Christ's death and resurrection is about all creation, not just about humanity. And then Romans 8, reminder to humanity to step up. The whole of creation groaning in labor pains, the whole of creation needing hope. And it is when the children of God are revealed, when we step up and into our calling and into right relationship with God and the natural world, that all is put in right balance and right relationship. So much Christian history, jumping from the Gospels to now, but I'm just going to detour briefly to the Franciscan tradition, very well known for affirmation of and attention given to all creation and to the natural world. And then I'm going to come back to the contemporary story that is around us in wider society. So this in many ways has got Christians digging back into the Bible to find the things that we'd lost and forgotten. But we have Forest School, which Anne and Rachel will speak about in a bit. We have all the wildlife charities are really busy trying to get us to re-engage with the natural world. I think there's been a bit of a realization that if you tell everybody that they're bad and wrong and should live differently, everybody just feels a bit guilty and puts their barriers up and then actually doesn't do anything different at all. We just feel a bit guilty and get stuck. Whereas the unlocking of different way of living comes from falling in love with the natural world and reconnecting. And when we fall in love and reconnect, then living differently is unlocked and comes naturally, which actually seems to me to be deeply theological in all kinds of ways. So that sense that it is love that that motivates and has us living differently. Richard Louv's Last Child in the Woods, it's a book I'd like to reference, which I love, and uses this term nature deficit disorder, and how lack of connectivity with the natural world is actually deeply unhealthy for us in all kinds of ways. It fits so nicely with that triangle of interconnection between God and the people and the lands, that when we're not connected, then our well-being suffers. And he goes through various research, such as the one where if you sat in a hospital bed, you're probably lying in a hospital bed, aren't you? If you're lying in a hospital bed and can see some kind of green out of the window, you actually recover quicker than if you can only see kind of grey and concrete, to a level which is actually measurable statistically. So he goes through various research on that kind of thing, and just highlights the different ways in which connection with the natural world is so important for well-being. This was doing the rounds on Facebook. Some of you may have seen it before. And brings us back to the role of the church in all of this. So the environmental problems around us, biodiversity loss, ecosystem collapse, climate change. Yes, these are the problems that we face. But perhaps the top environmental problems are actually selfishness and greed and apathy. And it's cultural and spiritual transformation that we need. Which is the work of the church, isn't it? So that's our bread and butter. It's what we do, kind of working with the human condition and encouraging one another and others to live differently and to find positive ways forward. Which brings us into my part two. I forgot to say, didn't I? There's a part one of why we're doing this, but part two, and I'm going to tell some stories of what pioneers are doing for the next few minutes. I've put a long list up there. I think I should say that no one pioneer is doing all of these things. I think that's really, really important to know. And actually, my headline really is there are all kinds of different ways of responding. And we can all do one thing. We don't all of us need to do all of it, but just for each of us to find the thing that we can do locally, and whatever makes sense in our own communities and in our own relationships and networks. But this slide just highlights the variety of the kinds of things that are out there. So my story is around Forest Church and also some conservation volunteering I'll speak about in a minute. Forest Church, doing outdoors what you can't do indoors. So there are other kinds of outdoors worship which are good and very worth doing. Forest Church particularly does things outdoors that you couldn't do indoors, relationship with the natural world, where you're looking and noticing and appreciating and allowing that to lift your heart and for that to be a part of your worship. You've got a cream tea in an image there. So we brought along scones and cream and then went blackberrying and kind of squished the blackberries onto some scones. And you'll see that there's some liturgy and some prayers that went around that, and thankfulness and nature, and reconnecting us with the sense that that our food is something that grows, and it's grown by nature. It doesn't come from a supermarket. It's all part of the whole cycle of life and the seasons and all of that. And some of the very, very big themes of Christianity are found when we explore outdoors. I'm really conscious of death and resurrection as we see the cycle of the year and the dying back in the autumn, and that sense of hope in the hope in the things that are unseen, and trust and faith that spring will come even though we can't see it, and it's lived out month by month, year by year in the natural world. Light in the darkness. I've stuck a couple of Bible verses up there. This is from a December, the shortest day. We got a beautiful sunset that day. So, Green Abbey, this is me again. I live in a community called Abbey Mead, hence Green Abbey, which has got rather nice kind of Abbey resonance as well. We do conservation volunteering in a council owned community green space, it's great fun, good for us, good for community relationships, all sorts I could say about that, but I'm going to tell some other people's stories. So we have two that are local for me. This one is also in Gloucester City. It's a neighbourhood project, community cafe. And I'm mentioning this one particularly because this is a project that doesn't have environment front and centre in what they do. They're about community and neighbourhood, but they have environmental ethics running through everything. So solar panels on the roof, choice of lighting, choice of insulation, reusing and recycling. An awful lot of their shelves are made from repurposed coffee import crates. Buying locally, you know, they use local suppliers, which isn't necessarily the cheapest. So they all kinds of stuff like that. So a community and neighborhood project that it takes environmental ethics very, very seriously. This is in Stroud, also local to me. The Extinction Rebellion, one of Extinction Rebellion's homes is in Stroud. So I've got that headline up there, Stroud, the gentle Cotswold town that spawned a radical protest. So there's a pioneer in Stroud that is supporting the spirituality of activists, actually from all kinds of faith traditions. So using music and the arts primarily in order to open up a space where activists can be refreshed and renewed with integrity in his own Christian tradition, but openness to everybody. I think I'm nearly out of time, so I'm going to have to speed up on my last few slides. So Anne's going to tell her own story. This is Anne, who is with us, and we have barefoot walking and Forest Church and foraging and reusing, recycling. I've got to whiz, haven't I? Okay, Anne is Rachel is famous for tree chalking. This is images from the BBC website. She's also been introduced earlier, kind of the stuff she does around Forest School and Forest Church of pioneering. Emma Major is a Forest Church leader. She's disabled. She was shielding during lockdown and had an online pioneering thing going, looking at photography, what can be seen through the window, and art from those that were stuck indoors during lockdown. Liz Kerry, Pilgrimage to Jerusalem, Around the World and Back. This was local walks. This is another lockdown one. So local walks, but then the mileage added up so that it became a pilgrimage to Jerusalem, and environmental concerns linked in with that. Beautiful Bourneville, community projects, community nature connection. Hazelnut Community Farm, they're doing loads of stuff in Bristol. The Youth Climate Network relay to COP26, which some of you may have come across. They started from Cornwall a couple of weeks ago after the G7 summit and are walking relay wise up to Glasgow for the autumn COP26 conference. And this is my last slide, just to say what I already said, but want this to be my headline. There's a huge, huge variety of things that we can do. None of us can do all of it. We pick the things that are right for our own calling, for our own situation, our own networks, our own passions. We all need to do something. What we do depends locally, but there's something for all of us to do.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Kate. And what an abundance of ideas and resources and celebration stories of you know, how we can be God's people who are pioneering and planting and caring for God's planet. So thank you so much for everything that you've just shared. In a moment, we're going to have a big conversation. But before we get there, just a reminder to everyone, do use the Q&A facility, because we're going to have a time of questions shortly. But before that, I would love to invite our panelists, Rachel and Anne. And Rachel, if you wouldn't mind going first, and then we'll pass over to Anne. Just share your reflections on what you've just heard.
Thank you. Thanks, Kate. It's lovely to see that variety of things, isn't it, that kind of bubble up all over the place. And particularly what she was saying, I think, rings true about how they look different no matter where they grow. And I think actually then we've got the natural world to look at there, isn't it? If you see plants growing, if you're on holiday in a coastal town, they look completely different from ones that are growing in the middle of the National Forest, from ones that are growing up in the Highlands of Scotland. And I think that that's really good metaphor, isn't it, for what these kind of pioneering communities look like bubbling up, is that they are shaped by the soil that they grow in, and they are going to be specific to the space that they come from and grow out of the place that they are, particularly for the place and kind of useful for the place they are. You know, the bees that use the flowers in one area might be different from ones that use the other, and that's why they need to grow like that. So my setting is that I'm in East London, and you might be forgiven for thinking, how do I spend my life working outdoors as forest school practitioner? Why is kind of nature relevant? Here I am in an urban setting. And actually, it's interesting to see that kind of the more you look, the more you see. Kate shows very briefly my chalking. In lockdown one, I went and chalked the names about the trees in the streets around me to try and get people noticing, because I think sometimes that noticing is kind of one of the first steps towards prayer, isn't it? If we notice, then we start to kind of be aware of something bigger than ourselves, and that tips us forwards into being aware of the God who's there holding all of us together. And where I do forest school, it's a tiny patch of green space. It used to be overrun with rough sleepers, with big scary dogs, with drug dealers, with syringes. But when I first found it, I was walking my tiny, tiny child around in a buggy, and there were clouds, butterflies and birdsong. And I thought this would be extraordinary, and how wonderful would it be to be able to give this as a gift to the local area. And so that's why I've been starting working there over time. And it's just that little drip feed, I think, of being in a place and kind of allowing yourself to be shaped by a place and sticking with it even if it doesn't look beautiful at first glance. I think sometimes we can erroneously think that for nature to be valid, it has to come with a stamp of approval from the powers that be, to be like a special site of scientific interest or a special natural beauty. But actually, the more you look, the more you can start seeing the beauty everywhere, in the plants, in the pavement cracks, and in the trees around the edge of the kind of park that you walk every day. If you notice and you start noticing those details, you see how they change over the seasons, you see how the insects come and visit them in the spring, you see how they're used for different ways by different parts of creation. And I think you start to feel your toes sinking in to that connection with the place that you are. And I think that's a really valid way and a valuable way of getting people to find a connection with God, not just a God that is one that's kind of pre-packaged and given to them, but something that really is fixed in their own home, fixed in the places that they belong to, the places that they know. A God who draws near to them, draws near to us in our own places, the places that we belong.
Over to you, Anne. Thanks so much, Rachel.
Awesome. Well, thank you. Thank you, Kate, for that, because it was really exciting to hear of all these new different Christian communities that are growing up. And in terms of the church planting, how perhaps bigger, wider churches have then taken those ideas and made those communities. I really loved what you were talking about with the triangle. I find that triangle so useful, seeing that relationship between God and people, and like people as part of creation, but then also the rest of the non-people creation. And actually how that then changes our hearts and our minds to actually what the whole big view of the gospel, so that we see actually right from the beginning when God blessed people with the creation mandate, you know, to care for creation, to enable it to flourish and to fill the earth with all his goodness. Actually, at that point, we come back to God, we then can reclaim that and take that into our local communities. And so I wonder if there's something in there about actually having a change of heart and mind that then inspires us to have these new communities that come out. So as we think about it in terms of creation and fall and the reconciliation and renewal, actually that then inspires us to look and think, where is it that we can bring reconciliation in our own communities, that actually we can then and create new communities and new church plants that can fill into those places. And I also really love the idea of worshipping within creation, that actually we break out of those man-made walls that we perhaps put around our faith, whether that's just in our rituals and the ways we do things, but actually also those physical walls, we break those down and we say, actually, God, we want to worship you. We want to be with you actually within your creation, which gives us time and space, like you said, to actually look at the leaves, look at the birds, you know, go with Jesus, consider the birds, see how I care for them. But actually we can do that when we're out there, and it's just beautiful. We have Forest Church, where I do forest walls actually with Greenlight, and we call it our Green Cathedral, and we just love it. It's so special going out there in the summer, the leaves just filling the whole sky above us and the sun shining through it. It's special. You know that you feel close to God out there.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. And so we're now going to engage in a bit of a conversation, and there's some fantastic questions coming in, which just shows there's a real appetite for this in our own context. Let's start with this one. I belong to a church where many of the congregation are elderly and some have difficulties of varying kinds. Where would we start with implementing some of these ideas, and how would we make it accessible for them? Just feel free, panel, to chip in as and when you feel able to.
I think the elderly have often been really good at some of the things that that younger generations are not so good at. You kind of think back to, you know, hanging on to stuff and getting it fixed. And you know, you buy a thing of quality and keep it for years and years and years and years. So I think we might want to start by appreciating that wisdom and learning from it. And just wondering with them how that wisdom can play itself out in a different society from the one that they grew up in.
Absolutely. And I think perhaps having that sense of it doesn't have to be a full hour and a half of being outside. You know, we've kind of got in that mind that's what church is, but actually your 5 minute walk or 5 minute sit outside is enough time to appreciate and live in creation. So maybe there is that sense that actually it can be small chunks, even if it's a service within church and then 5 minutes at the end, being able to get outside and experience might be a possible way to start.
Kate mentioned Emma Major when you were doing your different things people are doing. So if you're talking about accessibility, Emma Major is an expert. So she is disabled, she's partially sighted, she's also got long COVID, so she's very limited in how much energy she has to get out of bed and go and do things. And yet she has created this community around her, lots of which is to do with nature connection. And I found it really valuable, her kind of joy in noticing these little details and hearing how God speaks to you through these small, precious details. And so that's not even meeting with other people. That was, I think, on Facebook, or you could do something similar with a WhatsApp group, or you could share pictures, or you could even do it analog, couldn't you? Pass around letters of something that I'd noticed today, and this is one something that I heard God speaking to me through it. So it doesn't have to be, like you were saying, Anne, doesn't have to be service style, does it?
Yeah, and I loved what you said, Kate, about using the wisdom. Like one of my favourite old people, can't you have favourite old people? she is so passionate about caring for God's world, and she has the most amazing collection of fossils and of flowers and dried terrapins that she had when she lived in France. But she is passionate about it, and actually tapping into what is it that during your life you have learned about God and creation from your childhood, from your experiences with your own children, actually celebrating those as well.
There's something about giving permission to find God in the natural world, isn't there? Because some of us think that we're not supposed to, that we're supposed to mostly find God in church or possibly in one another, but that these kind of the sense of you know, that the being outdoors and that lifting our heart is something that's a little bit, it's not quite what we're supposed to be doing. So giving permission for that, and giving people an understanding of how that connects with our traditions and our faith and you know, the biblical record and all of that kind of stuff, that can actually free people, and then things come from there. Once we're set free, good things happen.
Yeah, and on that similar vein, there's a question or a request really to hear some stories of how green expressions of church are seeing those who are not yet involved in church be attracted.
Rachel, do you want to go first?
With Forest Church that I do, I have kind of quite a wide variety of people who choose to come. So some people who would go to church anyway. I have some people who kind of used to go to church but might feel uncomfortable in a church setting. I have some people who come who say, well, I'm kind of agnostic-y, atheist-y. I don't really know what I believe. I want my children to experience being part of a faith community, because how can they make a choice when they're older unless they've seen it? And it's somewhere that can feel comfortable for them. And I think if you talk to lots of people outside of churches and you say, where do you feel a sense of connection with something bigger than yourself, it's nature that comes up top. And I think we've really noticed that over the past year and a half, that everyone has had this kind of tug to go outside, and being drawn outside and being surrounded by nature has been where people have found that kind of sense of kind of safety and security. And how wonderful for us as a church to be able to open that up for them, open up this kind of magical path and say, well, it is, you're right that you're being drawn out here, because actually this is all given to you, and here we are with it all being wonderful around us.
Yeah, I think I love the idea that when we're helping people on a walking with people on a journey of discipleship, actually we start with discipleship practices perhaps before they actually go, yes, I'm 100% sold out for Jesus. And so, you know, we're teaching them how to engage and how to find God within creation, to see his glory revealed within it. We're teaching them how to care for God's creation if we're doing like litter picks, or if we're, you know, growing things together. That is part of discipleship, and it's kind of encouraging people to see that on their journey. And I think for me, we've had people who've come to Green Light worship events who haven't been followers, but who have gone away going, wow, that was really something powerful there, or I learned something about God that I hadn't really thought was related to God before. And so you're showing that those different aspects of God that perhaps people haven't linked to who they thought God was.
I think people have all sorts of baggage about expectations in church, don't they? So being able to be outdoors and a little bit chaotic, and none of that sense of having to kind of sit and behave and what have you, it's just a place where people can join in and join the community and slowly explore what faith means in a way that feels kind of quite natural and quite safe. And I echo what both Rachel and Anne have said, both from my experience in Forest Church, but also in my diocesan role. I hear stories from other churches kind of, and Forest Churches across the diocese, and that seems to be how it is for so many, that it just a kind of slightly chaotic, messy community that people can join and just slowly, gently explore at their own pace.
Unfortunately, we are short of time, but there is time for one more. And this is from Tom, and he says that in the BBC News today, there's an article about climate anxiety amongst young people. And he references the Tear Fund and Youthscape research, Burning Down the House, which, by the way, people should go check out. They surveyed 630 young Christians last year. And his question is, how should the church approach this issue, especially amongst young people?
Okay, hope. We offer hope. We come at this conversation knowing that it isn't all lost. When we're not in a position where it is a hopeless situation and we need to give up, because we know that God is at work. And for all that humanity has made a complete mess of the situation in all kinds of ways, God is still at work. And so we need to make that connection in our own faith, and also share that in whatever way, that might be in kind of openness to worship and we need to speak hope. Well, whatever, wherever and whatever, we need to speak hope.
I think there's a piece of research somewhere that it says that if you're wanting children and young people to grow up to be adults who make a difference and look after the planet, you don't overload them when they're young with tales of disaster. You push hard on that nature connection and you get them to fall in love with the world around them. You get them to hold the snails and get dirt under their fingernails. And that kind of sense of kind of passion and a relationship with the planet is something that tides you all the way through, I think.
Mm. Yeah. I think there's also something about us as a church needing to have a sense of actually what we are saved for. So that sense of actually, when we come into relationship with God, it's not just so that we can go to heaven when we die, but actually it's about reconnecting what it is that we fell from. So when you talk about the creation story and the fall, actually we fell away from caring for God's planet. And when we're reconciled to God, we're then like saying, okay, so now we're picking that up again. And so actually it gives people a reason for then caring for his planet. And I think that comes into the hope, because we then have that sense of we're doing this in partnership with God. It's not God saying, right, get on with it, see you later. It's saying actually we're working with God in partnership, and so the hope is in our relationship with him.
So good. That's fantastic. And Kate, I just wondered if you had 30 seconds, which you do right now, what would you leave us all with and say?
Okay. Do something. It doesn't matter what, in many ways. Just kind of dip your toe in. Find something that's a starting point. You might find that you take a detour and you dipped your toe in and actually go and end up going left or right and doing something completely different. But just take that first step and try something and see where it takes you.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Kate, Rachel and Anne, for your thoughts, your wisdom and insight. We're so grateful for all that you've shared with us today. We really appreciate your time. And also shout out to Matthias as well, who's our assistant host, been doing all the tech behind the scenes. He's done a grand job. Thank you so much, Matthias. And thank you to you, there he is. Delegates, thank you for being with us this afternoon. Please head over now to our main conference window where you watch this morning's content for the final message. It's one not to be missed. And other than that, may you have a blessed day and enjoy your Thursday. God bless.